Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. With us this week is State Senator James Skoufis. He's a Democrat from New York's 42nd Senate District. That includes places like Middletown, Woodbury, and Monroe. Senator Skoufis is chair of the Senate Committee on Investigations and Government Operations. We welcome you back to the Capital Connection, Senator Skoufis.
Fantastic to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we bring you back because you made some news this week. You've decided that you want to become the next chair of the Democratic National Committee. That's a major role. What made you decide this is something you want to go for?
Well, I think most Democrats woke up the next day after November 5th with viscerally strong feelings about where our party needs to head from here. And look, you know, we need to do things differently, I believe, in the National Democratic Party. The next DNC chair ought not be the operative type or the product of a party machine or a DC Beltway guy. We've tried all of those things many times over, and here we are, completely locked out of power in Washington. And so I am admittedly the outsider in this race. I wear that as a badge as I'm having my conversations with the 448 members of the DNC who get a vote on February 1st. And look, you know, we just need to get back to winning. That's all that I would be focused on as the next DNC chair. That's all what the Democratic Party needs to be focused on, is getting back to winning in a dominant way. For the past over a decade now, we've either been losing or white-knuckling it across the finish line, eking out very tight races. The last time we had a really dominant performance was all the way back in 2008. You've got to go to a presidential election, President Obama's first election. And so, you know, that's my main focus. I come from a district that Donald Trump won by 12 percentage points a few weeks ago, while I won re-election by 14. In fact, he's won my district three times over now. And so I know what it takes to win. I know how to communicate with people, including those who have left our once big Democratic tent. And I look forward to bringing that coalition building skill set as the next DNC chair.
Well, I'm wondering whether you think it's something that the folks in the DNC will hope is that they get an outsider. So, for example, DNC chair, the current chair, Jamie Harrison, is not seeking a second term. Other candidates who have joined the race include Ken Martin, the chairman of the Democratic Party in Minnesota, and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. How do you separate yourself out and gather some name recognition here beyond the major candidates that are in?
So there are two ways I'm accomplishing that. One is I'm speaking to wonderful reporters and journalists and media outlets like yours, and I'm getting my name out there so that the broader Democratic Party can understand who I am and my rationale for running, and most importantly, the approach I would take as the next DNC chair. But I'm also having what will be hundreds, if not thousands, of one-on-one calls and meetings with the 448 voting members of the DNC who will cast ballots on February 1st. I know full well that I'm starting as the outsider in this race. I don't come into the contest with a list as long as my arm of years-long DNC relationships, in some cases, for some of my competitors, decades-long DNC relationships. I respect the other candidates running. I've spoken with them. I've met a number of them. And for example, Ken Martin has done an excellent job as state party chair in Minnesota, and same for Ben Wickler in Wisconsin. But as I'm having these conversations with the voting members, there's an enormous desire to, again, do this differently and, you know, not necessarily just knee-jerk go along with someone who has the relationships. They have an intense desire to choose someone, to elect someone to be the next DNC chair who knows how to win the nuts and bolts of campaigns, someone who's going to be able to go everywhere, to every corner of this country, no matter how traditionally uncomfortable some of those meeting rooms and media outlets and communities may have been for Democrats and the Democratic Party. That's what I've lived and breathed for 12 years in a district like mine in the Hudson Valley, where that is predominantly red. I go into those meeting rooms. I go into the Elks clubs. I go to speak with media outlets that may be less than friendly traditionally to Democrats, and I'm able to have those conversations. I'm able to coalition build, bring people back under our tent, and we've got to start doing that nationally again.
We're speaking with New York State Senator James Skoufis. He has thrown his hat into the ring to become the next chair of the Democratic National Committee. You're hearing some of his rationale now. Now, there's a part of this that's very important, right? Raising money. Now, that's something politicians don't like when it comes to running for election. But you got to be able to raise money if you're going to run the DNC.
That's right. In an off year, you're talking a few hundred million dollars as a DNC budget. And in a presidential year, a major election cycle, it's many hundreds more on top of that. Now, look, you know, I think it's fair and objective to say that I'm one of the strongest fundraisers in New York state politics. I know how to have those conversations with donors, and I'll be able to continue the strong fundraising success that the DNC has exhibited in recent years. But there's a piece of this that's equally, if not more important, and that is how we're spending that money that comes into the DNC. And for a very long time, years if not decades, we've been getting ripped off as a party. The DC consultant class has acted like hogs at a trough in developing these contracts with the DNC that are 7 and 8 figures in cost. And the only reason some of them are getting that business is because they're friends of a friend of a congressman or some otherwise well connected to the DNC and its membership. That needs to end. And I'm uniquely situated in this race as the outsider, if I'm fortunate enough to be elected, to walk through those doors and on day one, let every single one of those vendor contracts expire. Let's go out to rebid in a competitive, fair fashion, find savings. And here's the important part. Shift away that money from the DC consultant class that I will owe nothing to, and send that money to the folks in the trenches, the state parties, the county parties, new partnerships with organized labor. That's where that money needs to go, not to yet another vendor who's ripping us off to send 700 more text messages to voters a couple of weeks ahead of the election to harass them and create no value for the DNC and the Democratic Party. And so that's where I'm also well situated here as the outsider. I will owe nothing to the green room circuit in Washington or the cocktail circuit in Washington. I'll be able to go there into the DNC on day one and make serious structural changes. No more tweaking around the edges. We need a lot more than that out of the next DNC and the next DNC chair.
Senator Skoufis, it certainly seems like you are paying close attention to those election results. I think one of the things that came out, many political analysts suggested that the Democrats had lost touch with the working class. And here you are talking about the party elite, the Washington politics that goes on that you want to stop. So I assume this is part of an overall strategy here to get back to the Democratic roots that included a working class.
That's right. A lot of that working class, a lot of just average voters who, quite frankly, many of them are less than political or even apolitical in some cases. They feel the Democratic Party has become too elitist. They've become too academic, that we've become, quite frankly, out of touch with their everyday challenges as Americans in recent election cycles. We can sometimes speak in overly academic ways that make it seem like we're running for chancellor of a small liberal arts college rather than for public office to represent them. And, when we, for the better part of the past 4 years, were trying to convince people, tell people the economy was doing wonderfully, pushing these think tank white paper talking points, people immediately knew that, we were disconnected from reality, because the next day they'd go to the supermarket and they'd see that meat and bread and milk, those prices have doubled in just the last several years. When we use terms like Latinx, which was very in vogue with the political class and the Democratic Party for a number of years, I have yet to meet in 12 years of being in the state legislature, I've yet to meet one single Hispanic constituent who refers to themselves as Latinx. We've got to start becoming relatable to the American electorate again. And yes, returning back to our working class roots, turning a laser beam focus on, you know, those everyday challenges, financial hardships that Americans are facing, and also embrace the difficult issues. You know, there. I think a lot of times when the Democratic Party has tried to dodge having a conversation about, for example, public safety and border security, I've always embraced those conversations. I was endorsed by 13 police unions a few weeks ago for re-election, and it's because I do a lot more listening than lecturing. And I think, you know, that's an important lesson to be learned from this last election, is that we as a National Democratic Party should stop lecturing, telling people how they should be feeling, what they should be believing, listen to them, what's on their mind, and start being responsive to their concerns again.
Senator Skoufis, I heard an interview you did with WAMC's Jesse King where you talked about police unions and firefighter unions who used to support Democrats broadly, but that support has faded away. I think specifically of the term defund the police and what that had done to hurt the Democratic Party, even though many said that's not really what they wanted to do.
Defund the police has turned out to be three of the most damaging words to ever hit the Democratic Party writ large. Whenever I'm speaking to law enforcement or speaking to individuals that care about public safety, I always tell people I am a fund the police Democrat. And so, you know, we again have to be embracing some of these difficult issues. And we do have to be cognizant of the fact that our once big Democratic tent has shrunk. It is frayed. Now, by the way, it is frayed on both edges, both the middle and the left. And so certainly in the middle, for the first time in as long as people can remember, the National Firefighters Union, the IAFF, did not endorse our Democratic nominee for president. We've long lost the rank and file cops, hardworking, good police officers who make up the police unions and other organized labor in the law enforcement space. I represent a large Orthodox Jewish community that by and large feels like the Democratic Party has left them. And then, you know, across the spectrum, you have Arab American communities that feel over the past couple years the Democratic Party has disrespected their worldview, and college campus activists who similarly feel the Democratic Party has not even paid them attention or respect on the very complicated, nuanced challenges and issues in the Middle East. And so, you know, it starts with the next DNC chair going out to all of these constituencies with some contrition, by the way, and explain to them, hey, we know that we have not done well enough on XYZ as the Democratic Party. Today starts a new day in our party. We want you back under our tent. Let's open a dialogue that's respectful, even if we can't agree on every nuanced issue of every complicated component of those issues. Let's at least have the conversation, let it be respectful, and let it be known that this new Democratic Party wants you back in the coalition. That's where it's got to start.
You are listening to James Skoufis, the senator from the 42nd District. He's a Democrat. He wants to become the next chair of the Democratic National Committee. I'm David Gustina. You're listening to the Capitol Connection. Now, Senator Skoufis, let's talk a little bit more specifically about the election results. There's the national election results, then there's the New York election results. New York didn't do so badly for Democrats, of course, worried about the Congress. That didn't play out the way Democrats were worried. And, you know, you've got Proposition 1, which passed overwhelmingly in New York, so-called Equal Rights Amendment, despite pushback, obviously, from Republicans and others. The issue for me is you're a state senator. You're going to start the next session as a state senator in New York, and have the New York Democrats overall learn the lessons from the election, or will they proceed as normal with their majorities?
So the New York election results were interesting. There was actually an 11-point swing towards Donald Trump in New York State from just 4 years prior. Yet, as you pointed out, we picked up and flipped several U.S. House seats, which was, it was a quite successful effort in that regard. We had a strong coordinated campaign. The governor was intimately involved in that effort. The issue that Republicans had, and the reason why you had that dichotomy, is that the Republicans suffered from a poor distribution of votes in New York State. Some of their largest gains were in otherwise heavily Democratic communities, like many in New York City, for example, that, you know, the Democrats still won at the end of the day and still won by fairly significant margins, but by less significant margins than 4 years ago. And so look, I think we have to certainly acknowledge that we had these successes in the U.S. House races in New York, but we also have to be mindful that there was a very substantial shift towards Donald Trump from 4 years prior. And so, you know, as we enter the 2025 legislative session, in fact, we just renominated and voted for Andre Stewart Cousins to continue on as majority leader just this morning. We need to be mindful of, yes, of course, protecting New York's interests from the Donald Trump administration that no doubt is going to wreak havoc wherever it can on blue states and go on a retribution campaign, as we've seen them do many times over, especially during their first term, against any people and communities that were not supportive of them in their election just a few weeks ago. But we have to do it in an intelligent way. And we, the Democratic Party, we can't just be the anti-Trump party. We have to stand for things ourselves, too. And that's, again, what is imperative for the next DNC chair, for our National Democratic Party and its leadership, to go out into every corner of this country and explain to folks, share the vision of America with folks that we have, that what we stand for, how we're going to help them with their everyday challenges, not just oppose and say no to the terrible things that will no doubt be coming out of the next Trump administration.
I guess the question for me would be, and this is the one I threw at Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay, was because of some of these gains, the swing that you talked about, will the Democrats in the legislature, the leadership, the Andrea Stewart Cousins and the Carl Hastings, will they, along with the governor, of course, will they allow the minority? Will they allow the Republicans to have more say? Will they give them more credit for ideas? Will they work across the aisle in a more bipartisanship manner now that we see what's happening nationally? And some of your words taken to heart here, that they have to shift, even if they think, oh, well, we won in New York.
So look, I have worked with both Speaker Hastie and obviously Majority Leader Stewart Cousins. They're both phenomenal leaders. The governor, certainly, over the past couple of years. And look, you know, they have always demonstrated an interest in doing what's right, not what's democratic or not what's political. And to the extent that we can work with Republicans in an even stronger fashion, I think there's always going to be an interest in doing that. But that requires a two-way street here. Oftentimes, the Republicans in Albany are unfortunately more interested in making political points or throwing bombs, hostile amendments on the floor that are not of substance and are just to, allow for being able to pump out a press release immediately after. And so it does require a partnership. I don't think the Democratic Party should be out there on its own saying we want to work with Republicans when Republicans in bad faith are not looking to do the same. And so, yes, of course, I think there's always going to be an interest in better working with those across the aisle, but it requires mutual interest.
Yeah, well, one of the ideas you are not happy about, that comes from the Democratic governor. That's congestion pricing, and it's back now. $9 to go below 60th Street certain times a day. You were very much against this congestion pricing plan when I spoke to you the last time because you don't. Where are you going to get the train? There's so many issues for your constituents. Where are you now?
That's right. I'm in the same exact place. It won't be of any surprise to you. And look, you know, this is an important, broader point, and that is that we as Democrats, we have to have the hard conversations with ourselves, too. And that's part of my campaign for DNC chair. Of course, we need to stand strong and oppose to the terrible policy, the circus of nominations that are coming out of the incoming Trump administration. Protect New York State, not just be anti-Trump, be pro-America, pro-Americans, and pro-working class values. But we also have to be honest with ourselves and have the difficult conversations with ourselves about how we can be better. And certainly, you know, on this particular issue of congestion pricing, I've been quite vocal. I think that there was a more nuanced way to do this in a district like my own. There's virtually no train service. And so to the extent one of the intentions of congestion pricing is to nudge people onto public transit, make it more expensive to drive into Manhattan. What about those transit deserts that don't have a viable public transit alternative? And so, you know, this is one of those issues where, I haven't been afraid to speak up and lean into the conversation with my own fellow Democrats, because we have to hold ourselves accountable and we have to have these difficult debates within our party as well. And I think that the American public expects us to be reflective and to not just be monolithic and to have those debates.
One of the other areas that we're all concerned about, and that's reflected with constituents not only in New York, but all over the country and the world, is the climate, the environment. And one of the areas I see, at least on the Republican side, not much budging is in this area. We have a number of groups, including the Business Council of New York State, asking to slow down all these environmental regulations that are coming on board, which are an attempt to meet our climate goals, which it looks like we will not meet, as so many other countries, states, and municipalities are also finding out they won't be able to make. You've got the HEAT Act on the docket for this coming session. You've got the TREES Act. I spoke with the representative from NYPA, the New York Power Authority, about how they're attempting to build a renewable infrastructure for the electricity grid, and more needs to be done. I mean, how is it that I hear from the Republican side things like, well, you know, New York, they only put out like 2% of the emissions. They're not really a big participant in global climate change. But what happened to New York being a benchmark, setting the benchmark and doing the right thing?
Well, let's first be real. If New York was its own country, its own economy, we would be among the largest economies in the entire world. And so the claim that we should not be a participant in this conversation when we are such an impactful participant in the world's economy, I think is just really one burying their head in the sand here, not wanting to have this conversation. I was intimately involved in helping negotiate and certainly voting for and passing the landmark 2019 climate change law that we enacted. It was and is the most aggressive climate change law in the entire country. It is highly disappointing, although not terribly surprising given what's transpired over the last several years, that we are not on track to meet those milestones laid out in the statute. And so we do need to evaluate what that means. It might mean revisiting either the milestones themselves or some of the substance that makes up the runway that we've laid out over the next couple of decades. I will say that I'm heartened. The state just literally days ago went out with a request for proposal for new nuclear projects. This is a space, and I know it's a little controversial. Some environmental organizations and advocates are okay and even supportive with new nuclear, and others are not. I believe that nuclear does need to be part of the renewables mix. It's emissions free, and we should lean into that. And quite frankly, it's been somewhat shocking that it took this long for us to begin to put out feelers and incentivize new nuclear power plants. Now, obviously, Indian Point closed several years ago. We want to make sure that these new plants, if any new ones are developed, are sited in appropriate places, far from urban centers. But I believe that's an important step in the right direction. Nuclear makes up a disproportionate, very large amount of our power production, even with Indian Point closed here in New York State. I'm hopeful that we'll be able to get back on the right track. But in the meantime, we have to evaluate, what this all means for the next several years. And how do we get back on the right track?
Yeah. And Senator Skoufis, I would just add that we need to be careful. If we put these out to bid, let's not go with the lowest bidder, right? I mean, we're talking about the safety. We're talking about nuclear energy.
That's
we need
right.
to have these plants build beyond what they were in the past and have double safety guards and everything else that they need to keep that reactor safe from a meltdown.
Completely agree. And this is one of those spaces where, it, as you pointed out, it ought not be just the lowest bidder, but it should be what is referred to as the lowest responsible bidder. I completely agree.
Well, finally, I just want to leave you with this, Senator Skoufis. What do you think the chances are that at some point we will have New York City Mayor Andrew Cuomo?
Well, I think we're going to find out in the next several weeks whether he's a candidate. Look, you know, as I think many of your listeners know, you know, the former governor and I overlapped quite a bit in state government, certainly where I, you know, we could find agreement. I sought to find agreement on behalf of my constituents. And then there were many other times where I deeply disagreed with some of the actions and policy that came out of the governor's office. You know, I happen to think that primaries make for stronger nominees. Primaries are a healthy part of the democratic process. In fact, one could say that I am part of a primary right now running for DNC chair. And so if Andrew Cuomo wants to resuscitate his political career and run for New York City mayor, God bless, I suppose. There are some exceptional candidates already running, including my great colleague, State Senator Zelnor Myrie. But again, petitions are right around the corner. They start up in February. And so I suspect we'll know from Andrew Cuomo whether he's running or not in the next several weeks.
State Senator James Skoufis from the 42nd District, and he has been our guest this week on the Capitol Connection. I wish you all the luck in your quest to become the next chair of the Democratic National Committee. Those votes come in on February 1st. Thanks so much for joining us on the Capitol Connection.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much, David.
Support for the Capitol Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. The Capitol Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capitol Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capitol Connection, I'm David Giustina.